Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Hi, this is Dom DeLuise, and I hope you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I wish for you what I wish for myself, leftover turkey.
The Bob Seska Show.
People are asking me why Bob, why are you playing those things, Bob? They make me laugh. From our nation's capital, it is Thursday, December 2, 2021, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, how you doing? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, day 317 of the Biden-Harris administration, 341 days until the 22 midterms. I am on Instagram. My handle is the Bob Seska. I'm on Twitter, too, at Bob Seska underscore go. Okay, so David's not here. Well, we have, you know what, let's just jump in. We've got a very special show for you today. That's right. Yep.
Jody on the show.
Jody's here.
That's what we're waiting for.
Yep.
I'm going to talk with Seska.
That's I.
And T-Rex some more.
Not today.
Nothing really grows with Jody on the show. With Seska.
Jody on the show. Hi, Jody.
Woohoo. Hi, Bob. Hello, Bob.
Hello.
Hello, Bob.
It is From the Bunker, the From the Bunker podcast, from-the-bunker.com, also patreon.com/from the bunker. And you know who else is here? We have a very special guest, someone who makes me think it's Friday, and it's not Friday yet. It's still Thursday. Kimberly Johnson.
I haven't talked to her in forever.
Yeah, I know. Just yesterday. Kimberly Johnson is here from our Friday after party. Yay! And, of course, from her very own podcast called Start Me Up. You can find it on Patreon, patreon.com/startmeup. Go and subscribe. Please do. If you love this show and you love Jody's show, you got to go and sign up for Kimberly's show.
Yeah.
Because you have to complete the whole set. See, there's the there's the Stephanie Miller Extended Cinematic Universe, right?
Right.
And if you're not subscribed to all the different players, it's like watching one Marvel movie and then skipping five movies and then trying to catch up after not seeing them. All right, ladies. I'm surrounded by ladies.
Right, yeah, I love this hello. So much. Hello, hello. Yeah. I didn't even hello. Say hello.
Yeah, that's right. We got to talk to you about Jamie Harrison here in a few minutes.
I know.
It's an exciting development that's taken place on Twitter just in the past, I don't know, a couple of hours.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into that here in just a bit. But first, holy God, I've got so much to say about Donald Trump testing positive. For COVID. This is a bombshell story out of The Guardian. Here's what happened. Saturday, September 26th. You know why that date is significant? Saturday, September 26th, 2020. That was the date of the massive super spreader event in the former White House Rose Garden, now the Eastern European cement bunker, the foliage cemetery that Melania Trump has replaced the Rose Garden with. And on the same day, I assume it was after, because Donald Trump was on his way. He was on Air Force One on his way to a rally. So it must have been after the super spreader event. Donald Trump had received word that he tested positive for COVID while on Air Force One. Again, this is just a few minutes after the super spreader event. So it's possible that Donald Trump was the source of all those people at the super spreader event getting COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that both of you? Is that the read you're getting on this? That maybe he was the guy?
Yes.
I mean, possible he was one of many, but it seems like he's the one they're monitoring the most.
Right.
And he already had symptoms at that point. He was apparently having cold symptoms or something like that, looking worn down.
Yeah, you could see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that they're playing the video, especially at the debate when he was with Biden, mm-hmm. you can hear it in his voice.
What? And remember, he wanted to take down the plastic divider between them.
Oh my God, so irresponsible. I've got lots to say about the Joe Biden aspect of all this, the debate aspect of all of this. So what happened was, you have that positive test. He's on Air Force One. They immediately go to retest, do a second test, which I'm using this word in all caps, allegedly negative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know at this point, do either of you have any knowledge as to whether or not we have verification of a second negative test? Because my instinct is to go, well, they're lying about it, so it's probably bullshit.
Bullshit.
Yeah. But apparently this second negative test, he saw it as, quote, full permission to press on as if nothing had happened. But then the debate occurs on the 29th, just a few days later, on that Tuesday of the following week. So Saturday 26th, he gets the positive test. Then he gets the, what we consider to be a bullshit negative test, which was probably maybe a false negative. I mean, at the very
negatives are more prevalent than false positives.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
So that's entirely possible. Then on the 29th, a few days later, on a Tuesday, that's when the debate occurs. And as Mark Meadows describes it in his book, there was nothing that was going to stop Donald Trump from attending that debate, right? And apparently he barreled into the room. He was excited about it. And Greg Sargent had a great piece in the Washington Post today implicating the Trump family as well in all of this. Yeah. I have this crazy theory now. And as I was mentioning on the Banter podcast earlier today, as we were recording that, I have no reason to give Donald Trump and his family the benefit of the doubt. There's no reason whatsoever. We should never do that.
Ever.
I believe that Donald Trump wanted to infect Joe Biden.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. 100%.
Right. Yeah. As soon as that positive test went down, he believed that if Joe Biden, and this is just my theory. Mm-hmm. Again, I have no evidence along these lines. But my theory is that Donald Trump first didn't want to look weak. That's Donald Trump. That's one of his big things. I don't want to look weak. And I always project strength. We've read that a million times over the past 5 years. But also, I believe he thought that if Biden got the virus, who would know? Who would know that Trump gave it to him, right? So he would have plausible deniability as far as that goes. And it would give Trump an advantage because it would expose, you know, this meme that continues today that Joe Biden is old and feeble and on death's door and he's got dementia and all this bullshit. And this would have emphasized that if Joe Biden had ended up in the hospital. Mind you, this is before, this is just a few days before Donald Trump ended up in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So on Saturday, he gets the positive test. Tuesday, he's at the debate. And then the following Friday, less than a week after he gets the positive test, that's when Donald Trump is taken to Walter Reed. So at the debate, I think Trump wanted to give Biden that virus.
And he was screaming at him.
Yeah.
And that's why he wanted the plastic thing down.
Yeah, yeah, no barriers. And he could scream. He screamed the whole fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
And
he did.
Anybody who has been on social media, which we all know Donald Trump has, and regardless of the fucking idiots he followed, there have been those memes of people sitting across the table from each other.
Yeah.
And when you're talking and it shows how far, when you're not wearing a mask, you know, how far it reaches. So he knew that.
Yeah.
And he was screaming at him.
Well, Greg Sargent wrote today, rightfully observing that if you remember the footage from that particular debate, they would cut to the little peanut gallery they had set up because there was no audience, obviously, because of COVID. But the Trump family was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and as Greg Sargent reminded us today, none of them were wearing masks.
No,
I remember that at the time, people going, why the fuck aren't they wearing masks?
Yeah, I remember they came in and everybody, we all thought that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sargent wrote today, everyone around Trump was apparently told he was potentially contagious and he even appeared potentially symptomatic, even as Trump roared into the debate as if the opposite were true. If this is right, then what happened at the debate is even worse than you thought. That's because multiple people around Trump, including his wife, Melania, and his kids, Donald Jr. and Eric, all sat maskless at the September 29 debate, according to contemporaneous reports, despite the fact that debate attendees were required to wear masks. As numerous reporters personally witnessed at the time, Trump's family members did this after rebuffing a direct request to mask up from a doctor with the Cleveland Clinic, which helped organize the debate. That doctor even offered them masks, and they declined.
Yep.
They declined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, he's basically involving, if my theory is true, that Donald Trump wanted to give the virus to Joe Biden, either to put him in the hospital or to kill him. Mm-hmm. I mean, please, someone give me evidence that I should give Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt on this. Please tell me some reason why Donald Trump is redeemable beyond what I'm giving him credit for. I don't think that evidence exists.
No.
So on top of Trump spreading COVID all around every time he breathes and screams into his microphone, I'm surprised Chris Wallace didn't get COVID.
Yeah, really.
Sitting right there. But he also had his family. And we know for a fact that his family all tested positive. Barron got it. Melania got it. His White House family in particular ended up also testing positive at the same time Trump did. I mean, not on the 29th, but right around the time Trump was hospitalized, three days after the debate. That's when we also learned that Melania had tested positive and Barron had tested positive. This fucking scumbag, this sociopath, was so irresponsible. He gave the virus to his child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He gave it to his boy. I mean, he didn't run up and say, here's the virus.
Right.
He didn't do that necessarily, but he certainly didn't do what he had to do. He certainly didn't follow the right protocols, blasted right through all of that shit, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I mean, Lonnie's, when he went to see his dad for his 80th birthday this past February, obviously before we could get vaccinated, but his dad was good. He was tested two times before he left.
Yeah.
And then flew there in two different airports going there and two because where his dad lives. Mm-hmm. Can't fly nonstop. And then when he came home, I said, you're getting tested. You're living in one part of the house.
Yes.
I'm living in the other part of the house. You're getting tested 3 days after you get home and then a week after that.
There you go.
And so it was 10 days. Mm-hmm. We were living in opposite sides of the house and masking up indoors because I didn't want to catch it. And he both times was negative. So then we could, you know, go back into normal. But it was like, there was no way that I was going to catch it because he left the house and he's supposed to go again in February, certainly depending on Omicron and stuff.
Yeah.
But, and we're all boosted. So I'm not as concerned as I would have, as I was last year. And I may not make him get tested going there because his dad is boosted and everybody out there is boosted. Mm-hmm. But certainly coming home, yeah.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm not obviously a scientist. I'm not a physician, but the question I have, and maybe either of you could answer this for me, am I mistaken in believing that the positive test is the same COVID that he had on the 2nd, or did he somehow, you know, test falsely positive on the 26th and then somehow get COVID between the 26th and October 2nd.
No.
Cause that's within the time period that you would be tested positive. The negative test, if it indeed was negative or if they actually tested him, also questionable, that was most likely a false negative.
Okay. So the false test was the negative one.
Right.
The accurate test was the positive one.
Yes.
And it foretold Donald Trump's eventual Walter
October
Reed
2nd.
Hospitalization on October 2nd. Okay.
Yeah.
So for an entire week, I mean, it's about 6 days, Donald Trump walked around with COVID, with active COVID, with symptomatic COVID. He went to campaign events in Pennsylvania. He obviously, we've read about the, you know, military families he was meeting with. He attended the debate, interacted with all kinds of people there, including Joe Biden. So the question is, at this point in time, and this is a very, very serious question, how many people did Trump deliberately infect, and did anyone linked to those people end up dying as a consequence of what Donald Trump, how Donald Trump was behaving in the face of a positive COVID test? Were their deaths directly linked to Donald Trump's irresponsible COVID protocol? I think that's a real question that needs to be asked. I mean, have they, if they haven't already, they really need to start doing some sort of contact tracing.
Well, that's the thing. Remember the debate prep? I believe 6 out of the 7 people that were in the room with Donald Trump, including Chris Christie, got COVID.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Jesus.
And remember Chris Christie's book that sold, like, I think I could sell more books just by doing Cat my rendition of Stick Figures. But his book states that Donald Trump called him up and said, well, you got COVID. Don't tell, you know, you're not going to tell people that I gave it to you.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And, by the way, guys, before we move on, I just want to tell you some sad news. Eddie Mecca,
the big ragu has died.
Oh, he's man. Died.
That's a shame. Yeah, yeah. I saw that earlier. Another Laverne and Shirley cast member. Well, he's off with
Penny
Marshall.
I had such a crush
Marshall
on him when I was a kid.
I never did. Such a crush on him. I never had a crush on him.
You know, I go from rags to riches. Yeah, that guy. Yeah.
I had such a crush on him when I was like 8.
He was a hell of a good dancer. I want to say he was in A League of Their Own. There was some dance scene at a
yes,
at
he
a
was
club.
In that.
Oh, so okay, all right. That was the same guy then. Because I was like, oh, you know what? That guy in A League of Their Own looks like the Big Ragu. That can't be the same guy.
No, I'm completely picturing him in that. So, yes.
Okay, all right. But yeah, that is very, very sad. And they didn't say whether it was COVID or anything, did they?
They just said he died, according to Variety, he died Saturday in Newhall.
No, that's a shame.
And no cause of death was given except that he passed away peacefully. So it doesn't sound like COVID because it's usually not a peaceful death.
Yeah.
Unless he didn't want any, unless they just gave him a morphine drip. Because my friend's mom, who died Monday of COVID, was 92. Wow. Yeah. And once her breathing started to get labored, they didn't want to put her on a vent at 92.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they gave her palliative care.
Right.
To shame. Just ease her pain, which is the better way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we may know if it's up to his family. Hmm.
So back on Donald Trump here and that's okay. This is important to talk about. The question that I now have, and obviously we should ask our legal expert, Jody. what kind of legal ramifications are involved in knowingly parading yourself around with active COVID and not telling anyone?
Well, the problem is, unlike with, say, HIV, which is very specific, like a person literally has to be very intimate with you in order for you to get it. You can be in a room with somebody with COVID, whether they know it or not, and not get it. Or you can, and if, say, they know, they shouldn't be around you without a mask, certainly. But if you're... If he was only with one person the whole time and that one person got COVID and they were not around anybody but him that whole time, sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you're around other people and you're around somebody that has COVID, but you're around, like the guy that got the Omicron variant here in California, we were talking yesterday, he flew from South Africa. That's a minimum of 2 airports that he landed in. So there's gate agents at both airports. Then there's the passengers on the plane, the flight attendants, the pilots. Then each airport, anybody that person encountered, plus all those people's family members. Now, that's thousands of people potentially that this one person could have infected.
Yeah.
But they also were around a bunch of other people that they could have gotten it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Unlike HIV, which is difficult to get comparatively easier to contact trace with. You should do contact tracing. But yeah, unless Donald Trump was with one person the whole time, those 2 weeks that he for sure had it, and that one person was only with him, you can't really prove that they got the COVID from him. You can, it's, I think that if you have, if you knowingly have COVID and do not quarantine and do not mask up, then anybody that gets COVID within your sphere should have at least a little bit of a right to sue you for medical expenses.
Yeah, no shit. I mean, this leads back to the even bigger picture question, which is, yeah, this is a colossal bombshell. The president of the United States knew he had COVID, and then he was going around infecting all these people. So this is a major, major story. But at the same time, does it even matter if there's no actual ramifications for this? If this doesn't produce some kind of additional outcome, whether it's legal action against Trump or some sort of new rules when it comes to COVID protocol or something. I don't know. I don't know what you derive from a story like this. But again, does it matter then if there is no, you know, comeuppance for all of this?
Well, I think the only way that would matter is if people out there, voters out there, that either were going to vote Republican or maybe independent, I don't know, that the truth, that we understand what happened, even if there are no ramifications legally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that they're going to be able to get them on anything. I mean, fucking hard. It's hard enough to get them on the stuff that we know for sure.
Yeah.
Right. So.
There's an extra dimension to this, though, too. This is not the New York Times reporting this. I mean, it's obviously the news is coming from The Guardian, but this is coming, the original source is Mark Meadows' book.
Yep.
So I don't know if Donald Trump has released one of his official, you know, whiny diaper baby statements.
Mark Meadows is backtracking.
Oh, he is? What is he saying?
According to, I think I heard him. Yeah, he was, Travis got a soundbite where he's like, oh, this has been taken out of context. And did it. No, it hasn't.
Oh, my God. It's wow. Published in his book. What are they going to change the
book? Yeah, and he's backtracking. Book? He's completely backtracking on his own book, saying that the press is taking it out of context, of which is like.
Oh, my God.
But okay, why would he have written it in the fucking first place? Because
right.
He knows what they were going to say. Mm. He knows. He's not an idiot. He knows.
Right. Oh, my God. Mark Meadows.
F you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That I just, it's so brazen, it's so shameless, and you know, we shouldn't be surprised at this point when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
We should right. be, oh yeah, here they go again. This is what they always do. But this is giving Donald Trump the wiggle room to say, ah, fake news.
Of course.
Fake news, not true. I didn't test positive. But they've got evidence. They should have evidence of the positive test. You should be able to subpoena the positive test. But none of that fucking matters to the Red Hats.
Nope.
To the entire Red Hat Entertainment complex and be like, oh, Mark Meadows said he was mistaken, so never mind. If they're even paying attention to it at all, which they're probably not, despite it being in Mark Meadows' book.
I know.
God, you think it was coming from like, you know, Rachel Maddow's book or something like that.
Yeah.
This is absolute goddamn madness. Meantime, a second case of the super mutated Omicron variant has been detected in the United States in a Minnesota resident.
Okay, so yesterday it was San Francisco, today it's Minnesota.
That's right. Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah, and that person recently returned home from an anime convention. Oh, one of my people in New York City, according to the Minnesota Department
so
of Health.
We got both coasts now because if I wonder where they got. Did they have any idea? Was it on the plane or do you know when they tested positive?
I think they tested positive when they returned home. So they were able
to
get from
New York
City. Yeah.
They got, so now it's for sure on both coasts.
Yeah.
It's all over the country.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that now we could safely say that there are cases around the entire country.
Yeah.
Maybe it's low case, you know, a low number, but still, I can't say for sure that we have one in each state,
mm-hmm.
but maybe the majority of states, maybe two or three here and there we will find out in 2 weeks or however long it takes for this virus to show up.
Yeah.
How many people, because it's going to, I think it's going to explode now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I don't know if it's going to explode because I do think the vaccines are going to make a difference. Yeah. So I don't know if it'll explode in the same way the original COVID virus that came out. I don't know if it will, but I think we're going to see big numbers in the next couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. It says here, this person who tested positive is an adult male living in Hennepin County. He's fully vaccinated and only has mild symptoms.
That's what the San Francisco guy is too, which does suggest at least anecdotally at this point that the vaccines are working against this variant, which is good news.
Very good. Yeah.
And Dr. Doom said on Stephanie's show this morning that we should know in the next week or two whether the vaccines do work in the same manner as they did against the original strain for sure, let alone Delta, because it does work against Delta. And because most everybody that's been vaccinated is now getting boosted, even though we were losing efficacy after 2 months or 6 months on our original doses, it goes back up to 95%. Efficacy once you get boosted, which means we could quash this variant if everybody gets boosted.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was Fauci. I think it was Fauci. So it could be somebody else, another expert. But either way, this person said that booster, you don't need that 2 week time frame
for boosters
to be effective, that they're effective immediately.
I think that was Dr. Redliner on my show who said that. Yeah. Well, Dr. Doom.
I thought when you got boosted, you had to wait for 2 weeks to get the full protection, but you don't.
Well, now that you mention it, it seems to make more sense that because it's stacked on top of the existing mRNA vaccine, then it would take less time because you're not building from zero, you're building from X percentage. Right.
Right.
So that, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But meantime, the word is getting out that people should go around and get the Omicron virus, the Omicron variant.
Oh, God, people!
To develop natural immunity. Fauci was asked about it in the press room at the White House yesterday. I don't know if you saw that clip, but the Ducey boy. I forget his, what's his first name? the Ducey
Peter?
Boy?
The Ducey.
Peter?
The Ducey. Peter Ducey. The Ducey or Ducey?
Yes, Ducey Ducey.
Ducier Ducey.
Peter Ducey constantly trolling from the White House press room.
Yeah.
Good God, where the hell are we in this country? But yeah, so,
he's not good at it, though.
Yeah, but no, he was basically saying, well, first he was saying, asking Jen Psaki, he was like, why hasn't Joe Biden solved this COVID crisis like he promised? You know, which is basically saying, my network is going around telling people to get deliberately infected with the virus to create natural immunity or blah, 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 blah. Why can't Joe Biden stop people from doing that? And it's just like, what are you talking about? And then he asked someone else asked Anthony Fauci about, I'm calling him Anthony Fauci still. It's been almost 2 years and I'm still calling him Anthony. Dr. Anthony Fauci said, someone else asked Fauci about because the Omicron virus hasn't shown a whole lot of hospitalizations or deaths at this point, apparently, that maybe this is the perfect virus to get in order to get natural immunity. What do you think, Dr. Fauci? And Fauci's like, no! He's like,
fuck you, you idiot.
No, this is I got Fauci's response right here.
No! No!
Broke a window. I mean, don't get him started. He's going to put his fist right through anything. But yeah, that's the madness. And I saw Greg Gutfeld the other day saying the same thing. Hey, perfect virus. Go out and get it. Get it. It's fun. And we'll all do it. And this is what we want because it's natural immunity. And it's perfect. It's a perfect virus. Perfect variant for us. That's going out over the airways. You talk about legal ramifications. I mean, the ballsiness in the face of potential liability, putting that kind of thing on the record. And I know Fox News viewers have the attention spans of gnats, for God's sake. They're not going to care. That's, I mean, we saw this for many, many years with Bill O'Reilly, where he fucks up, and then 3 days later, he does a correction at the end of his show of his fuck up, if at all, and it just, you know, it just kind of dissipates into the atmosphere. There's no real accountability for any of that. And so I don't think there's going to be accountability for people like Gutfeld telling people to deliberately get an unknown COVID variant.
Right. Well, that could be like if I went on television and I told everybody to go lick public toilets, it would literally be up to them to go lick the public toilets.
That's true. And with cable television, there's no public airwaves involved, so you can't regulate that. We had Rocky Mountain Mike and I had that conversation on Tuesday about the jurisdiction of the FCC and where, you know, a fairness doctrine may not even apply or certainly wouldn't apply to any cable carriers. So, yeah, that's an additional layer of immense frustration to all of this, that there's literally nothing we can do about people saying, hey, you know what, let's go deliberately worsen this. You know, it's like going back to what I was saying about Donald Trump and trying to deliberately give Joe Biden the virus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, that's my theory. I underscore theory. So don't sue me. But the fact is that they're basically trying to sabotage Joe Biden by deliberately getting the virus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And saying, look, his record sucks on COVID. And it's because of what they're doing. They're creating this sucky record. It's like Mitch McConnell, during the early days of the Obama administration, declared that his mission as majority leader would be to make, you know, Barack Obama a one-term president. And so the theory was thrown out there that he was, and other Republicans were trying to deliberately sabotage the economy. This whole brinksmanship that we're seeing with the funding of the government and the raising of the debt ceiling. This is all monkeying with the economy in order to sabotage the other side.
Yeah.
So it's entirely within the realm of possibility that they're monkeying around with COVID in order to sabotage the other side, in order to sabotage Democrats. I mean, it's what they're all about now. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the central theme of the central tactic of the Republican Party? Mm-hmm. Own the libs.
Unemployment is almost at pre-pandemic levels today.
Yeah, Jesus. Well, you know, we're headed to, I haven't seen the new official BLS numbers, but the forecast from, I forget, ADP, I think it was, suggested a huge amount of jobs created for November.
Yeah.
And we are, that makes it, I think it's more than 500,000 jobs created in November on top of the more than 500,000 jobs that were created in October.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's leading us to 7 million new jobs created in just the first year of the Biden administration.
Yep.
7 million new jobs. You know how long it took Donald Trump to preside over 7 million new jobs?
Never.
Three. Well, yeah. It was technically 3 years. It was 3 years. Yeah. And then, of course, his fourth year, everything went to shit. So Donald Trump ended up with a negative job creation record. Not negative meaning it was bad. I mean, negative meaning he lost jobs over his four terms.
We lost over 20 million jobs.
Yeah.
The thing that was his whole problem with like testing and the numbers are bad. And all he had to do was without stopping the virus, which he could have done.
Yeah.
But that's another bag of anger. Mm-hmm. Tell everybody to mask up.
Yeah.
Put MAGA on the fucking masks. Make money off of it. Who fucking cares? Right, mask up.
Right, exactly.
Listen to the scientists. Mask up. Everybody can keep working.
Mm-hmm.
Keep doing, you know, lock down for a good 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. And then mask up, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back to work potentially. I mean, South Korea did fine. New Zealand, you know, I mean, other countries were doing that and in general did okay. Sweden, let's run rampant. What happens? They fuck up.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, but they won't. They won't because they're on this weird trajectory. Like, we're just going to we're going to go off that cliff.
Yeah.
No matter what.
It's their voters. I know. It's their voters that are, first off, dying from it.
Yeah.
Most likely.
Yeah.
And then secondly, even if they don't die from it, they may get a third of people that get this get long COVID. So they won't even be able to go vote. Yeah. So it's like, a third of your voters, you know, a bunch of your voters are going to die. And then a third of your voters that get it are going to have long COVID. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you have a very small minority of people that will vote for you. And you still don't want mail-in balloting. So I really don't get that. I mean, there's a whole it's the strangest, dumbest. Okay, the economy is doing better, guys. And everybody I know is saying, oh, we should message better. Not until right before the election because people have short fucking memories.
Right.
Start doing these get the ads ready.
Mm-hmm.
Get them going. Remind Democrats once the June SCOTUS opinion comes down, the Democrats want to keep women's rights available.
Mm-hmm.
Get those ads together for the House especially and the Senate and let's do that. Get them together. Start putting them together. Call me. I'll edit them for fuck's sake.
Well, you know what I want to say though? I agree with you. People have short memories, but I don't think that means we have to wait. I think we can message and get, you know, and perfect it. We can, you know, we'll talk about Jerry. I can't even say his name. Jamie Harrison. In a minute.
Right.
And his brother, Jerry.
And his other brother, Jerry.
Because there's something to actually say there that connects to what we're talking about now. But the idea is that, and I'll just kind of go into that. Jamie Harrison said to me, because I had tweeted to him about the fact that,
Okay. I'm holding you right there because I want to come back to this. I want to dedicate, you know, a big part of the next segment to your interaction with DNC chairman.
Well, then
Jamie
I'll save
Harrison.
What I was going to say. Then when we get to Jamie,
yes, hold that thought. Okay. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court and oral arguments in the Mississippi abortion ban. And that doesn't look good at all. We'll come back and talk about that a little bit more. But first, today's show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness, like Donald Trump, or preventing you from achieving your goals? Well, BetterHelp is going to assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist in under 48 hours. But this isn't just a normal therapist. It's not a crisis line. It's not a self-help line. It's professional therapy done securely on the internet. You can log into your account anytime you want. You can send a message to your therapist and you're going to get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change therapists if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and financial aid is available if you can't afford it. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website, read their testimonials, betterhelp.com/Seska. That's betterhelp.com/CESCA. Join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional therapists in all 50 states. Here's your special offer for Bob Seska Show listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Seska. Link in the description at bobseska.com. Betterhelp.com/Seska. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
This lonely, lonely Christmas, I can't help but feel that this must be goodbye to dreams of mine, a very plan that I made back in January. I stare at my phone alone at night. Am I doing this right? I feel like a reindeer in the headlights. Oh, this lonely, lonely Christmas.
As heard on such shows as this one. It's the great Wallace Shriver, otherwise known as Wallace, W-A-L-L-I-S, and her hit Christmas song from a year ago. This is called Lonely Christmas, of course. IamWallace.com, link in the description at BobSeska.com, right under this episode. You want to find all the music you hear, all the indie bands you hear on this show, just go to BobSeska.com, click the link for the particular episode you listen to, and I've got all the links right there for you, including the links for our fine, fine sponsors, our Patreon links, links to follow Jody Hamilton, links to follow Kimberly Johnson, links to follow Buzz Burbank, links to follow David T. Rex Ferguson, and all points in between, and thank you for doing that. We're going to be playing brand new music in January, so if you're submitting your songs via bobseska.com/music, sit tight until January. Meantime, we're playing all of our indie bands and their Christmas songs between now and the next couple of weeks. Okay, so let's see, where do we pick up here? I'm glad you're on the show today, Johnson, because we got to talk about your interaction with DNC Chairman Jamie Harrison. And this has everything to do with, you know, messaging, the thing we were just talking about before the break, and how you managed to get a response out of Jamie. It's a pretty big deal. I mean, he's the national chairman of the DNC.
It's a big darn deal.
It is absolutely a big darn deal.
A big darn deal.
And so you tweeted initially, you said, democracy slipping away and no one in leadership is sounding the alarm bell. Half the country doesn't realize fascism and white supremacy will take place of our democracy. Half the country doesn't vote. And Jamie Harrison replied to you, which was awesome.
With a whole tweet thread.
Yeah, but misspelled your name.
That's common.
Left off the extra E. Make sure, when you spell Kimberly's name, make sure to include the extra E for excellent.
I get an I at the end of my name.
I know. I've seen that.
Yeah. Kimberly, appreciate you and your passion. Please know the team at the DNC works around the clock every day to save our democracy. I wish the DNC had the powers most believe to get on TV when and whenever we want, run limitless ads on TV, radio, digital. That's not the reality. We don't have unlimited budgets. We don't control TV bookings, but this is what we have been working on relentlessly. One, returning to a 57 state and territory strategy.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have committed $23 million to our state parties to provide more resources to help build their capacity to win. Building a tech infrastructure to support organizing, registration, and voter protection work. We've poured millions into new tech tools to better facilitate outreach and protection of voters, such as Purge Tracker that lets us track and communicate with voters purged in states. We don't have a Fox News or OAN. I could wipe out the entirety of our budget in 2 weeks if I did just nonstop TV ads, and that means none of the other things above would happen. We have to have messaging and organizing and resources. That's what we work on every day.
Okay, so let me just interject.
Okay.
Because Lincoln's Bible said you don't need Fox or OAN. You can harness us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Pull social media, pull influencers into your operation. This is kind of what you've said, Bob.
Yeah.
Go on their podcasts. Let us help you raise money for targeted goals and specific measurable results. And take our advice when it comes to messaging. We're better at it. So I tagged again DNC, DCCC, and Harrison Jamie, because that's what he goes by.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you can come on my show. And then I did actually message him and said, I'd love to have you on my show. Because he also kind of said to me in one of the tweets that it felt like an attack. And that he feels like if they're getting attacks from the Republican Party and attacks from our side, it hurts. And it's like, this was not meant as an attack. And I did thank him. I said, thank you for your efforts and for everything you're doing. It's just that we need to do different. We need different strategies. And I agree with Lincoln's Bible. I think that every liberal podcaster out there needs to reach out to him. And I messaged him personally and said, I'd love to have you on. I will be completely supportive, not at all combative. And, I'll help you what I can to spread that message. And if we can come up with messaging together. So he, gave me the email, and I'm hoping that, he also said publicly that he would be happy to come on my show.
So he is. Have you booked him on your show yet?
I haven't booked him yet, but okay. I'm going to send whoever that person is the email.
Hey,
but the thing is it's like, it's great and everything if he comes on my show, but I'd love to see him even, go on everybody's show. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see him on Stephanie Miller. I'd love to see him on your show. I'd love to see him on Molly Jong Fast show, because we all have a certain amount of influence. Out of all of you, I have the least amount of influence. But, and I don't care. It's not a contest. I've got what I've got. You've got what you've got. But it's like if they could utilize us. And this is what I was, a couple people on Twitter did not like what I did. They feel defensive, or they feel as if I think Jamie Harrison is going to save us. It's not that. It's that we see what's happening. Mm-hmm. We see that the right is kind of like marching all over us.
Yeah.
And I get what Jamie's saying. They don't have the funds, but what they do have is us, and we're all fucking hungry for it. We all want to help with messaging. And I also think it would behoove the DNC to pay attention to social media and what sticks, because what's, if we had, there are so many liberals out there, progressives, liberals, whatever you want to call them, all on the same page. We all have these DM rooms where we amplify each other and we talk all day long. And every once in a while, somebody says, like, let's get this hashtag going, and we can get it to trend.
Yeah.
So the Democrats need to jump on that, because that's working. It means it's working. And if they don't have the money to hire the Frank Luntz, if they don't have the money to get on all those shows, they've got this huge, massive fucking platform with social media. I think Val Demings has outraised Marco Rubio on social media.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's very powerful. And I think that, I'm hoping that it doesn't end with my show, because if it does, then what's the fucking point?
Here's my concern with Democratic messaging. I think I've expressed this in the recent past, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but my concern is that the Democratic Party as an organization could come up with the best slogans. I mean, hashtags, bumper stickers, things that can potentially resonate. But I wonder if people who follow or are members of the Democratic Party, specifically people on social media, whether they feel as though they're too hip to share Democratic Party talking points. Do you know what I mean?
No, because if it's a good idea and it's not, if it's not like, they're all saying, hey, look what Jamie Harrison came up with, this hashtag. Right. If it's a good hashtag, it'll be used.
Okay, so I think the solution to this problem that I just presented is also to go through surrogates. To not only have, you're suggesting having podcasts relay the message and so on. I think that will work more effectively. That's why I was talking about a while back the idea of some of the outside groups, some of the super PACs and so on, who are circulating around the Democratic Party but aren't directly tethered to the Democratic Party. I think it becomes then more legitimate, or I think it's seen as more legitimate. Any messaging that comes out of that kind of, because it's
good messaging is good messaging. If you take a look at that ad, LBJ ad. I think it was the Daisy, the little girl holding the Daisy.
Oh, yeah, only yeah, aired yeah, once.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and it was hugely popular. It was impactful, and frankly, it wouldn't matter where it comes. If it's impactful and people go, whoa, look at that, and they start talking about it and they start sharing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I get your point, Bob, and I think that there are, you know, groups out there who are like, I don't know. But if the messaging is good, it doesn't matter where it comes from. People are going to grab it and they're going to run with it. And they're not going to necessarily say, this hashtag was developed by the DNC.
Yeah.
They're just going to use it. And so whether it's a hashtag, whether it's a meme, whether, you know, I mean, and the bottom line is, you know, Ronald Reagan introduced us to political ads, like using marketing, you know, using commercials and advertisements to sell the presidency, to sell Republicanism. So we can take a cue because we have Hollywood on our fucking side. I think more people in Hollywood, especially big names who have big money, should be stepping forward to either fund or host or volunteer or whatever it is, you know, in the same way. And if you could figure out, if you could just take, like, let's just say the DNC used some of their money to pay a psychologist or something like that, and the psychologist looks at everything, whatever information they need, you know, we need to win here and blah, 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 blah. They figure something out and then they give it over to a marketing team that puts it in a quick, effective, snappy slogan.
Yeah.
You know, like, for instance, we had defund the police. That's not a good slogan because the Republicans, if you know what it means, yeah, it's great, but go tell old white people in Florida, defund the police, and what do you think they're going to think? They're going to say, oh, that means abolish the police, and it doesn't. So we need these quick little things. Democrats deliver is good. And if there could be any ads, and I don't care who does it, I don't care if it's the Democratic Party or, you know, Midas Touch or whoever these, you know, some of these outside people, Don Winslow, who do these ads. If it's impactful, it will go. If it's as impactful as that Daisy ad. And right now we have fascism and white supremacy are big fucking deals. And they're just not, I mean, occasionally, you know, we've heard Joe Biden. We heard Joe Biden talking about it at the debate, and it resonates with people. And I don't see, you know, I mean, I see the Republican Party doing all this good stuff. They're putting out as much as they possibly can with a slim majority. They've been extremely, extremely successful, but they're not pushing the idea that fascists and white supremacists want to take over. And yeah. And how they're going to, and what their strategy is, because a lot of people just don't get it. And they need, and I think the most important thing the Democrats need to do, it's not necessarily, I mean, it's messaging, but it's more than that. It's reaching the 120 million people who don't vote. If we could just take a small percentage of them, we would have a massive turnout.
Obviously, this is an important conversation to have, but looking at the whole thing from 30,000 feet, we're less than a year out from the midterms, and here we are talking about not the specifics of the message or, you know, repeating what needs to be said in advance of the midterms in order to get people out to vote. We're talking about, oh, why can't they get a message out there?
Right.
And that, whether that's the Democratic Party's fault or whether that's Democratic voters' fault or a combination of the two or whoever's fault it might be, this is not good.
No, it's
that we
not
have
good
to sit here and talk about the Democratic Party doing the very minimum that you do if you're a political organization. You know, and it's just like, oh my God, it's the midterms are like right around the corner.
Well, that's, you know, the last mayoral vote here in Los Angeles, which is a while ago. And people on Nextdoor, because I'm on it just to watch the Karens.
Oh, that crazy
chat
website. Yeah.
It's nuts. Yeah. Every now and then it's okay. Like, you know, found cat, you know, yay. but in general, when they start getting upset about the homeless, but not in my backyard because they're all NIMBYs, but they all complain about the mayor and they complain about the city council. 25% of the city of Los Angeles, 25% voted in our last mayoral election.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
25%, which means 12.5% and some change voted for the mayor and voted for the city council, which means that's the people that are running this city, like it or not.
Yep.
Now, I happen to have voted for that particular mayor.
Yeah.
But again, really? That's insanity. This is a huge city.
Yeah. And look, I'm not trying to make excuses here for the Democratic Party. I tend to lean more toward, well, you know what? We also need to do our jobs, too. We are, after all, living in a democracy. And democracy means
totally
people power.
Agree.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country but or what you can do for your party.
I totally agree with you. But that's like telling a teenager, don't go have sex, or teenagers shouldn't have sex.
Yeah.
Teenagers are going to have sex.
But here's the problem as I see it. And this links into the discussion that was being had yesterday regarding the Supreme Court's oral arguments in the Mississippi abortion ban. And I was saying, you know what? The progressives who stayed home or voted third party in 2016 bear some responsibility for Roe potentially being overturned. And obviously, because Donald Trump won, he was able to appoint three Supreme Court justices, yada, yada, yada. We know how this all played out. And I was getting responses to that from Democrats going, well, maybe the Democratic Party should just give us better candidates. And then
They weren't Democrats. They weren't Democrats. Those are the fucking weaponized trolls.
Not always. There were a few names that I recognized in there saying that exact thing. People who I know are not trolls. Mm-hmm. People who actually believe
that. Yeah, they listen
to
the trolls.
They're still acting as though it's 1996, standing there with their arms folding, go, why isn't the Democratic Party more exciting? Why aren't they more likable? I don't want to have a beer with that woman.
And you know what? David Pepper, I think it was, no, it was a comedian. Stephen Hofstetter, the comedian, he said, there are liberals, there's Republicans, and there's apathy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Democrats, if you can, because you can't always get an Obama. Just you can't.
Right.
But if you can find, you know, instead of going for the safe centrist white man, look for people who are inspirational. It could be a white man who's inspirational, but don't get the boring fucking ones that you think are going to play to the middle, because it just doesn't, that's not our country anymore. The GOP wants to get excited, and so do the Democrats. Not every candidate is going to excite you. And mature people understand this, and we will vote for them anyway. But then we've got a nation of people who were gifted with democracy, and they don't know any better. They think that it's owed to them. They don't realize that it's their responsibility, that they have to maintain it. And we're working with that group. They don't realize it. It's not even about just give it to me. They just don't even see that they have to fucking do a goddamn thing.
Here's a good metaphor, and then we have to break real quick, and I want to talk in more depth about the Supreme Court arguments from yesterday. But you're driving down the highway, and about, I don't know, 100 yards down the road, an accident is taking place, right? Cars swerving and bashing into each other, and you're headed right toward it, right? You're headed toward this huge pileup. The conversation we're having here is about, where's the steering wheel? Where's the controls for this car? Instead of, oh God, I need to press on the brakes and swerve out of the way. That's the problem here. What we're talking about are the very entry-level basics of political communication. And we're doing this, as I was saying before, we're doing this with the midterms just around the corner, an immensely important set of midterms. We're in dire straits as a party if we're still figuring out the controls that operate the vehicle rather than figuring out how to use those controls to avoid the accident. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's just, it's a very stressful place to be. I know,
stressful.
We are where we are, but, you know, again, political communication. It's, you know, the first thing you learn when you go and get your political science degree. And it seems like, whether it's the herding cats thing, whether it's the progressives who stay at home. I notice here Susan Sarandon is currently trending on Twitter.
Oh, fuck her. Fuck her, fuck her, fuck her. F you.
Yeah.
Fuck her.
But it is very stressful to know this. Because the conversation should be about what the message is, not whether there should be a message.
And I think that Jamie Harrison and others have to start understanding that Yes, television is super important because older people vote, and they still watch the TV machines.
Yeah.
And so, yes, you have to hold your money back and make that important and do the right thing with that. I completely, as a production person and have been in television, you got to do that. But advertising on Twitter and advertising on Facebook is minimal dollars comparatively. Mm-hmm. Being on podcasts is easy. Being it's on free. Radio programs, it's free, right? And so... I mean, especially if you're good at memeing, that's free. And they need to learn that. And but also when it comes to the television, because news now is an entertainment, is part of the entertainment divisions of networks, they have to make money.
Yeah.
And they're all owned by corporations that don't want to pay taxes. And so that's why the green rooms are always full of Republicans, whether a Republican is in power or not.
Yeah. And I'll leave you with this before we break. There's a piece in the New York Times today by Jonathan Martin where he spoke with a Democratic pollster named Brian Stryker. And Stryker and his team talked to a bunch of voters from Virginia after this past Virginia gubernatorial election. And they talked to people who supported Joe Biden in 2020 and then voted for Glenn Youngkin this past November or strongly considered supporting him. And every single person in this, I don't know if it's a series of focus groups or just one focus group, but every single person that Stryker studied in the wake of this past election said that the Democratic Party was focusing too much on social issues and needs to focus more on selling the economy, you know, putting forth a plan for the economy, which is frustrating to me because that's all. I mean, all of Joe Biden's most significant accomplishments this past
year have been economic. Oh, my God. Oh, my fucking God. Oh, my God. And it's,
It is so frustrating. But at the same time, they're basically saying, hey, yeah, you want us to vote for Democrats. It's the economy, stupid.
And it is the economy, stupid. And, and you would think that it wasn't doing well based on media reporting.
Well, yes. And there's that, too. This, to me, also points to certain aspects of the news media, which was busily rending its garments over the Biden economy throughout the entire summer, not even noticing that all the jobs numbers were being revised upwards by hundreds of thousands of jobs. You know, and we only hear about that officially from the Washington Post after. Now, I know Reuters. I'm going to be talking to Heather Timmons from Reuters next week on the interview show. And she reminded me that, Reuters did report on the solid jobs numbers as those numbers were being revised and handed down. But, you know, it only gets into the mainstream press after the November election. And that's frustrating.
I don't remember who tweeted this, but this person, and it is a righteous tweet, and I retweeted it, basically said... okay, Americans are overwhelmingly in support of Roe v. Wade and in support of vaccine mandates, but you wouldn't know it from the press.
Right, and I've got some poll numbers on that that we want to talk about either on this portion of the show or on the shadow docket. So we're going to get into that a little bit more. But first, if you're only listening to this part of the show, speaking of the shadow docket, this portion that you're hearing, whether it's on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever, you're only hearing the first hour of the show. There's an additional 20 minutes, maybe even upward of, like 30 minutes, half an hour of extra show after the end credits roll at the end of our Tuesday and Thursday shows. And it's all happening on our Patreon page. Of course, I'm talking about the Shadow Docket podcast at patreon.com/Bob Seska Show or simply BobSeskaShow.com. It's a completely unfiltered, commercial-free continuation of all the fun and news, and it's only going to cost you pennies per episode. Shadow Docket drops every Tuesday and Thursday after the free shows, and it's only going to cost you $5 per month. And you're going to be supporting this fully independent podcast in the process. So don't miss out. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com. Bookmark it, send it to all your friends, and we thank you in advance.
Bob Seska! On Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer, singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on.
Oh, yeah, the great Jesse Terry here, one of our favorites, one of our favorite indie recording artists on the show. This is, of course, his cover of Joni Mitchell's River. His brand new Christmas album is called Peace, a Christmas collection, jesseterrymusic.com. Link in the description under this episode of bobsesca.com. Oh, man. Chez Pazienza's favorite Christmas song right here. And we've got, this is the first of three different covers of this particular track that we're going to be playing this year. So we'll have another one next week. And then the great CeCe Grace did one that is just breathtaking that we're going to be wrapping up the year of shows with that particular rendition. So stick around for that. All right, jumping back into things here. Oh, God. The oral arguments in the Mississippi abortion ban, Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health from yesterday. Immensely frustrating to listen to. This process yesterday that took place in the Supreme Court, listening to these justices, and I'm speaking specifically of the conservative justices, these are people, I mean, in total, nine of them, who represent one third of the federal government as it's outlined in the United States Constitution. There's the presidency, there's Congress, and then there's the Supreme Court. And these nine people, it's just nine people, nine elite people. And they don't know anything sometimes. I mean, they know how the law works to an extent, obviously. But when it comes to issues of medicine, holy shit, I'm not a doctor and I'm sitting there ripping my hair out. And I've got less and less hair as time goes on. Holy shit. Yeah, it was astonishing. You know, I think back to the Hobby Lobby decision and how ultimately what the Supreme Court ruled when it came to Hobby Lobby and the morning after pills covered in the Affordable Care Act, and how Hobby Lobby didn't want to pay into a health care plan that would support the morning after pills, even though they don't induce abortion. Mm-hmm. They only block fertilization.
Yes.
But the Supreme Court was like, well, that doesn't matter. Right. If Hobby Lobby believes it's abortion inducing, then it is. And that's how we got the fucking Hobby Lobby decision. That fucking madness that came out of the Supreme Court. So that was disillusioning enough. But then yesterday, to hear the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court go, well, 15 weeks is enough to have the choice, don't you think? No!
No.
No, no, no.
And Jody described it best on my show about why 15 is not enough.
Yeah.
No! No!
Sorry.
And Jody. By the way, the 15 weeks is from fertilization, not the first time you realize you're pregnant.
Right.
So by the time
so it's
you
at least
do
2 weeks.
It, yeah, by the time you do realize it, you just don't even have enough time, mm-hmm. especially if you're living in a place where there aren't very many clinics.
Yeah.
Well, or they have the waiting periods. You find out and you live 300 miles from the nearest clinic. You've got to take 2 or 3 days off. Then you have to wait 2 or 3 days. You got to go back home. It takes you 2 weeks to get an abortion that you should be able to get anywhere at any time, should you so desire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And then there's a broader question here, which is that are there other statutes of limitations on any other medical procedure?
No.
Nope.
I mean, imagine, you know, you go out and you get a really bad sunburn and you develop a melanoma, but it's after 15 weeks and you go to the doctor and say, hey, you know what? Supreme Court ruled you can't be treated for that melanoma after 15 weeks.
Right.
You knew you had 15 weeks to make a choice. You knew you got that sunburn.
Yeah, so you knew that had that weird mole.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly right, Jody. Right. And it's not like I'm not comparing babies or fetuses to cancerous moles. I'm not saying that. This is just a metaphor to explain how there aren't any other statute of limitations on fucking medical procedures. But it's okay to do it with this because women are second class citizens, according to especially the men on the court, which all happen to be, except for Amy Coney Barrett, all happen to be conservative.
They're not conservative. I'm sorry. No. You know what? Maybe Roberts is.
Yeah.
But fucking Kavanaugh is a drunk rapist. So fuck him.
Right. So 15 weeks, that's more than enough time to make a choice. And it's just like, well, you know, the Solicitor General is trying to convince John Roberts. Like the reason, you know, 22 to 27 weeks is the standard in Roe for viability is because of viability.
Mm-hmm.
Is because, you know, and I was saying on Fuglesang's show last night, Roe v. Wade is a classic decision, not just because of the rights it grants, But because of the way it was presented, there is a classic American compromise in that. We're going to make abortion legal, but only legal up to the point that the fetus is viable outside the mother, you know, obviously
without too much external care.
Yeah, right, right.
Because, I mean, technically a 20-week fetus could survive, but it needs so much care.
Well, there's that complication as well. And that that puts us in that. That's why there's kind of a range for viability rather than a clear and concise cutoff point, which is exactly what the Supreme Court's going to end up ruling or supporting from Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health. It's fucking insane. And this is going to be the first time that the Supreme Court, if they rule the way everyone thinks they're going to rule on this, this will be the first time that I can remember. And I think Lawrence Tribe was saying something along these lines last night, too, on MSNBC, that the Supreme Court has taken away rights that it has already granted.
Actually, I think Tom Hartman said that at some point, I think with Plessy, they took away rights initially.
Yeah.
And then they were restored with Brown versus the board.
Yeah. Plessy v. Ferguson was separate but equal, right? That was
right, which took away rights which took away the rights of people that were not white.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To, you know, partake in eating in a lunch counter, sitting on a bus.
It was all about segregation.
Eating from a drop. Yeah. Exactly. So that took away the rights of people that had been granted to them with the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments.
Yeah.
So that's the only time that that's been done before. And guess what? Bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the meantime, Brett Kavanaugh was listing off a series of Supreme Court precedents that were eventually overturned without mentioning that it was always from the perspective of granting more rights rather than rolling them back. So he did mention like Brown v. Board kind of overturning Plessy and so on. But this could very possibly be the first in many decisions that roll back rights. What happens?
How about Loving v. Virginia?
Or Obergefell, for God's sake. I mean, they could use this precedent to roll back same-sex marriage. We said, well, we did it with Roe. You know, Dobbs came in and we said, okay, fine, you can roll back the viability point to 15 weeks, overturning the viability ruling in Roe. And then we can also do that with Obergefell. We can do that with Griswold v. Connecticut.
Loving,
yeah. All this shit. Birth control, everything is on the table. And you know what? Everything is on the table for red states.
Mm-hmm.
Blue state women, you know, while it's horrible that women in red states will become second-class citizens, blue state women will retain the right, reproductive rights and so on because of...
I said this yesterday with Jody, but the bottom line is if it's gutted.
Yeah.
If the Supreme Court doesn't come out and say, we have just banned abortion across the United States, it's going to be, it's incremental. It's quieter. It's just slowly. I mean, back when Obama was president, we saw, whether it was in Mississippi or Texas, we saw these states that had all these abortion clinics and they did the Tea Party, which is basically now MAGA, put in all these trap laws. So these clinics were closed based on these bullshit targeted regulation of abortion providers. Maybe it was because there was a drinking fountain and because of the size of the hallway, they're like, okay, well, you have to shut down or you're not close enough to a hospital and you have to shut down. So there were all these clinics that just shut down and abortion is still legal, but it's kind of impossible for some people to get, especially for poor people who are the majority of people who get abortions. And so if by doing this, and I think they know this, it's quiet and there's not going to be this huge scream from women in this country like we saw in 2017 when Donald Trump took that fucking office and then all of us took to the streets. Now, I do think that going to the streets with those fucking hats on made a huge difference. All these women ran and won in 2018. And even in 2017, the elections happened every year Trump was president, and Democrats pretty much won all of those elections.
We just won a bunch more elections the other day, too.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah.
So in Georgia, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that the whole point here is that I think it's important for the people who understand what's going on to make sure the people who don't understand this is basically getting rid of it. And yes, it will still be legal for some people.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got to get people angry about the fact, because again, this doesn't just include women. Men, most people who get abortions are married people. married children. Women and they already have kids and they can't afford another kid. And so the husband isn't just like, oh, well, I'm sorry, my wife had... He's part of it. This affects him. It's not just a woman's issue.
Right.
Mm. Well, and you know, it's funny if this couple that Lonnie and I know are Trump supporters and they are an interracial couple. And because Loving is on the potential chopping block along with marriage equality and birth control and all these other things, if they didn't live in California.
Right.
Or if they travel to a place that now bans interracial marriage and they try to check into a hotel, they may not be allowed to. And it's like, y'all support this shit.
I know. Yeah, you're voting for these people. Yeah.
Exactly. You vote for people like this and then you expect to retain your rights. What the fuck are you thinking?
Yeah. And again, this is a another clarion call to be more proactive as Democrats and not as so reactive. Because one thing we love to do is after something goes down, after something horrible happens, then we spring into action. What we need to do is spring into action. There needs to be that pussy hat march before the midterms this coming up year instead of after, you know, some horrible cabal of Republicans gets elected.
That seems what we like to do. We like to come in after the fact.
I know.
So we need fucking Susan Collins.
I know.
Fucking Susan Collins saying we need to codify women's rights. Fuck you, Susan Collins. I know.
I know. I fucking hate her.
Yes, indeed. So it's, yeah, it's immensely frustrating.
And name's Susan.
Yeah. And again, we're talking about the nine most elite legal professionals in the entire nation. And when it comes to issues of medicine, they're like, they don't know nothing. And you hear that shit go on.
No, there's a difference. They don't want to know.
Right, exactly.
I'm just a podcaster sitting here who plays fart sounds. Yeah. And I know a little more than these people do when it comes to medicine, you know, when it comes to gestation and what happens when. I mean, isn't there also a thing where many catastrophic birth defects aren't diagnosed until like the 20th week or something like that?
Yeah, between 16 and 20 weeks is when you find out a lot about the gestation of it. And there's new reporting that new studies reporting that we used to think it was 1 out of 5 pregnancies end up in a miscarriage that women don't know about. It's 40 to 60% of all miscarriages happen with basically you're a day or two or a week late and it's a little heavier and you didn't know you were pregnant. Now, women are going to prison for miscarriages these days.
Oh, yeah. And I want to talk about that in depth. I was just going to bring that up because Clarence Thomas brought up a particular point yesterday with regard to somehow Clarence Thomas landed on cocaine yesterday. And he brought up the example. Yeah, he brought up the example. Well, if a pregnant woman takes cocaine and her baby dies, is that an abortion? It was like that old George Carlin bit where he's talking about quizzing his priests when he was in grade school and saying, yeah, yo, father, what happens on a holy day of obligation and you're in an airplane and you cross the international dateline? And the priest obviously has to go, well, it's a mystery. Just like that. It was like Clarence Thomas was channeling that kind of question. Like, well, what happens if a pregnant woman takes cocaine and then...
What that means is women will no longer be allowed to drink alcohol as long as they're of childbearing years or take any drugs for depression. Should they need them or pain medication should they need it? Because it could, you know, abort a fetus. You could have a miscarriage, ladies. It's very handmade. It's
Unfucking believable. So we're going to talk about the Clarence Thomas thing and what it actually means here in just a few minutes on the Shadow Docket program on our Patreon. I just called it a program.
It's a program.
Yes, that's right. As if it's a TED Talk or something like that. The Shadow Docket is our extra bonus show. It's basically one third of our Tuesday, Thursday shows, but it's only available for our Patreon subscribers at patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Meantime, speaking of Patreon, make sure to subscribe to Kimberly Johnson's Patreon. That's patreon.com/startmeup. It's an amazing show, and she's going to be talking to Jamie Harrison from the DNC very, very soon. So stand by for that. Also, Jody Hamilton is found at from-the-bunker.com. Also at patreon.com/from-the-bunker. All right. Let's see. In addition to the Clarence Thomas cocaine thing, which is just insane, what we're really going to talk about is the you know, the laws that have been slipped under the door about, you know, miscarriages and people who have been arrested for having miscarriages because of these laws. We're going to get into all of that on the Shadow Docket Show. Meantime, the Gutfeld phenomenon. I got to talk about the Gutfeld phenomenon on social media. I've observed this over the past 24 hours, and I'll see if there's any validity to it. Plus, something from the D.C. Circuit about the Mueller report and why no one was charged. No campaign staffers were charged. D.C. Circuit wants to know why. So we're going to talk about that. Plus some pollgasm numbers and a whole lot more. We'll see you over on the Shadow Docket, folks. Meantime, after party tomorrow. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.